The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Always be a school. The changes to the academy has allowed for the community to retain some sense of ownership of the building, and with much of the space still accessible to the public. Mr. Speaker, I wish to congratulate the volunteers and staff, particularly those of the Lunenburg Academy Foundation, for their dedication and hard work. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
This will be a short one. The Honourable Member for Kings North.
This Liberal government is gouging hardworking Nova Scotians. We learned this week that Nova Scotians are paying 70% more in taxes than they paid just 4 years ago. Not many of those people got 17% raises in that time. Not many of those people feel that the services they receive from this government are 17% better. The Liberal carbon tax pricing threatens to increase tax burden on hardworking families by another $1,250. It's no wonder so many of the people we represent are finding hard to make ends meet.
Order, please. Time allotted for the member's statements has expired. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. While we're talking about the cost of living today, thousands of Cape Bretoners are assessing the damage from the devastating Thanksgiving floods. For many, insurance won't cover the tens of thousands of dollars in damage. Some people's homes will have to be demolished. They lost their cars, furniture, appliances, and clothing. On top of that, they've lost personal and family photos and heirlooms. My question, Mr. Speaker, is the province going to provide disaster relief funding to the people of Cape Breton?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I was in the community, Mr. Speaker. I was in Glace Bay. I was in Sydney. I was in Escassone to look firsthand at the damage that had taken place for these individuals. I spoke directly to them, Mr. Speaker. My colleagues who are from Cape Breton are home today working with those individuals. Minister McClellan will be taking the Federal Minister Goodale through the area to have a look. We will be triggering a disaster relief program with the national government. But we are also, Mr. Speaker, working with Cape Breton United Way to make sure that we deal with the emergency funding at this point. Many people were completely taken out of their homes. Everything was lost. They're living in hotels, Mr. Speaker. We want to make sure that those families recognize that people of Nova Scotia are standing with them, and this government will stand with them.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We know that the need is now. Many people have been forced to stay in hotels and eat in restaurants all week. The CBRM has put up $25,000 for the initial relief to help those who are in need now with their hotels and everything. There is already over that much in private donations as well. Will the Premier agree to match the humanitarian efforts of the CBRM and the people of Cape Breton and encourage his federal cousins to do the same now?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've been working with Cape Breton United Way. We'll have more to say about that, Mr. Speaker, but I want to ensure the Honourable Member and the good citizens of Cape Breton that their provincial government will be standing with them, not only in the short term, Mr. Speaker, but in the long term.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier also. Mr. Speaker, on October the 4th, Nova Scotia teachers rejected a tentative agreement for a second time. Contract negotiations are about options. They are about give and take. To be successful, both sides need to stay at the table. The Premier has been quoted in media saying, and I quote, "No arbitrator, no third party will determine the collective bargain agreement will be in this province, and that the financial package that was on the table is non-negotiable, and that non-monetary concerns like working conditions would not be part of the contract, and I will table those documents." Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier, please clarify what this means for the collective bargaining process with teachers.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Our government has sat down with two different executives of the Nova Scotia Teachers Union and came to tentative deals. Mr. Speaker, there was a lot of give and take at that table. As you know, there was a very different package put on the table by the government. We moved on that. We made adjustments. There was improvements made by the executive of the day. They went out to teachers twice who said no. Mr. Speaker, as part of the collective bargaining process, as he should know, there is no a right to binding arbitration for teachers. They have the right to strike. That's something they're looking at as a group. But I'm telling you, since coming government, Mr. Speaker, after devastating cuts to the classroom, we've continued to invest. We put cap classes, hired math mentors, mental health clinicians. Do we know there are more things that need to be done in the classroom? Of course we are. We're going to work with classroom teachers, and that doesn't have to happen at the bargaining table, Mr. Speaker. My office, the Minister's office, is always open to improve the learning environment for students and the working environment for teachers.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in December 2015, the Liberal passed the Public Service Sustainable Act, otherwise known as Bill 148. It proclaimed this piece of legislation will impose a four-year wage padding on 75,000 public servants, including nurses, teachers, social service professionals. The NDP is opposed to this bill. Now there seem to be some confusion about the government about how this their own bill would impact teachers in this province. In a radio interview on October the 7th, the Premier said Bill 148 will not apply to teachers. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier, if Bill 148 does not apply to teachers, why are they mentioned 11 times in this bill alone?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, Bill 148 applies to arbitration, Mr. Speaker, and it puts parameters around arbitration that the arbitrator has to deal with the financial money that is on the table, Mr. Speaker. We have put a fair offer on the table. There is no more money, Mr. Speaker. I don't know where the Honourable Member thinks I can find that. He's standing up asking me to invest in classrooms, improve the working conditions and the learning environment, Mr. Speaker. They'll stand up again on another question asking us to invest in long-term care. They'll stand up on another question, Mr. Speaker, asking us to invest in every piece across the province. At the same time, Mr. Speaker, providing the most generous wage packages in the country. We cannot continue to do both. We've provided what I believe is a fair wage pattern, Mr. Speaker. At the same time, investing in the learning environment and working conditions for teachers. Well, can we do more in terms of improving the learning environment? Of course we can. We'll continue to sit down. But, Mr. Speaker, all the money is on the table that we have to settle collective agreement.
The Honourable Leader in the House on his, for the New Democratic Party on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, in a CBC article, the government House leader for the Liberals promised that in the event of a strike vote, the government would, and I quote, ensure that the public service are maintained regardless of any type of labour dispute, end of quote. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier tell Nova Scotians if this means this government plans to proclaim Bill 148?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for his hypothetical question. It's my hope, Mr. Speaker, that there will be no disruption in terms of in the classrooms. We are not looking for a strike, Mr. Speaker. We don't want a strike, Mr. Speaker. We're working with classroom teachers across this province to improve the learning environment. We're going to continue to do so, Mr. Speaker. But teachers will make that decision, and their union will make that decision on what they believe is next for them.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Tens of thousands of Cape Bretoners have suffered through long power outages because of one of the worst storms in recent memory. The warning signs were clear, but Nova Scotia Power saw fit to send 10 crews to the Grand Bahama instead of staying home to deal with a very real local disaster. Nova Scotians pay among the highest power rates in the country. The Premier had lots of tough talk for Nova Scotia Power during the last election, but it appears his bark was worse than his bite. Mr. Speaker, does the Premier believe it's reasonable to send crews away when there was a pending disaster here at home?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the honourable member for the question. I want to thank the Minister of Energy. He's been working extremely hard, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that we stabilize energy rates in this province. Mr. Speaker, when I was in Cape Breton, the mayor and members of the community were talking about the response that had come in. There were crews from around the region that had come in and responded to the needs of those communities. Would we prefer to have, Mr. Speaker, the power back on in the next hour? Of course we would. But there are a lot of hardworking people on the ground who are ensuring, Mr. Speaker, that life gets back to some level of normalcy in the short term. And we're going to stand with the people of Cape Breton to make sure that we improve in the long term.
The honourable member for Sydney River Myra Lewisburg.
There's more bark, but no bite. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia Power exists to serve the Nova Scotians, period. For the power company to think it's acceptable to send crews to another part of the world while we're anticipating a storm that is disastrous is wrong. Nova Scotia Power still has guaranteed profits, and Nova Scotians still pay the highest power rates in the country. So my question to the Premier is, will the Premier intervene today and ask the URAB to review the power company's priorities when it comes to Nova Scotia, seeing how we pay high costs for this utility?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank, Mr. Speaker, all those who have come to the aid of Nova Scotia and come to the aid of Cape Bretoners, Mr. Speaker, not only in offering support and work and going down there and tree trimming and putting power back on, Mr. Speaker, but the many people from across Canada who are wanting to contribute financially to ensure those that were hardest hit have the support and can get life back to normal, Mr. Speaker. It's wonderful to see the country and the province come together, Mr. Speaker, when a community is a disaster. I want to recognize the good people of Cape Breton, who when Fort Mac was in trouble, they came to the aid of the people of Fort Mac. And let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, the country noticed and the country is not ignoring the fact, and they will come to the aid of Cape Breton.
The honourable member for Halifax Needham.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Emergency Management. This week, Cape Bretoners were hit hard by the remnants of Hurricane Matthew. The damage was widespread and left few residents and business owners unaffected. As they file insurance claims and wait to hear what this government plans to do to alleviate the situation, many require rapid financial assistance. 1 week after Albertans were evacuated due to forest fires earlier this year, NDP Premier Rachel Notley and her government put preloaded debit cards in the hands of the hardest hit. So I ask the Minister of Emergency Management, it has been 5 days, when can affected residents expect to have government support in their hands to meet their urgent needs?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Emergency Measures Organization.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Of course, all of us here in the House keep our thoughts and our wishes with those people in Cape Breton who have been absolutely devastated by this weather event. We have immediately sent resources into the area, human resources, to support people, help them coordinate, and ensure that the efforts on the ground are suitable for a response. We are working on a plan as we speak to ensure that those most grievously affected are fully supported by all levels of government.
The honourable member for Halifax Needham.
Given that Nova Scotia is set to confront more severe storms, forest fires, and droughts as our climate changes, it seems strange that this government has cut spending to the Emergency Management Office this year. So I ask the minister, why would this government cut funding to emergency measures?
The honourable minister responsible for the Emergency Management Organization.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When it comes to climate change, that's obviously a concern for all levels of government. Currently, our municipalities are required to ensure there's a climate change plan in place when they're looking at development and planning in their various municipalities. Government is very focused on ensuring we're able to respond to the needs of our community members when they're in need. When we had the water shortage in southwestern Nova Scotia, we acted immediately to ensure that there was potable water and facilities open for water for daily use. When we're looking at this terrible flood, a lot of resources were poured into Cape Breton to ensure that things were being coordinated on the ground and that people were getting the information that they needed, and that work will definitely continue.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, we now know that the government and the Premier quietly formed a working group on carbon pricing at the Department of Finance over a year ago. That didn't stop the Premier from acting surprised when the federal government announced carbon pricing for all Canadians, including Nova Scotians. Well, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are very worried about what carbon pricing will do to their already high cost of living. I'd like to ask the Premier if he can tell Nova Scotians today what options is his working group on carbon pricing considering here in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there was no secret about the fact. I think any good government would bring all the tools they have. They would bring all of the expertise they have in government, reach out if they need some extra advice, Mr. Speaker, to deal with what we knew an issue was coming. We were surprised, and I was surprised, that the national government made the announcement they did on the day they made it. We had been working with the Department of Environment to look at what we believe is a fair solution for Nova Scotia. We have laid out a couple of options. We're continuing those negotiations. I'm encouraged by what I'm hearing from the national government, Mr. Speaker, but I've made it clear to the national government and to all Nova Scotians that this government will not be imposing a carbon tax.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, a good government would be open and transparent with the people of Nova Scotia about what it itself, our provincial government, is considering. They formed a carbon pricing working group over a year ago. We're finding out about it now, Mr. Speaker, and Nova Scotians are wondering how much more is carbon pricing going to cost them, Mr. Speaker. It risks our jobs, it risks our livelihoods, it risks driving up the cost of living even higher. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Premier, will he release the terms of reference or any other documents that tell Nova Scotians what options the Carbon Pricing Working Group of Nova Scotia is considering today? Will he tell Nova Scotians and show them in writing what they're working on?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. It's wonderful to hear a Conservative leader finally recognize that climate change is an issue and that we all have a role to play in it. I want to thank Mr. Speaker, hardworking Nova Scotians who've led the country in GHG reductions across Canada. Mr. Speaker, I made it very clear to the national government that effort needs to be recognized. The work that we've been doing in this province, we believe we have a solution to help not only a further reduction in greenhouse gases in this province, but to help the national government achieve its overall climate reduction. We're going to continue to negotiate that, Mr. Speaker, and before any changes are made, we will make sure we communicate that to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I hope when the Premier is patting himself on the back for Nova Scotia's good record on reducing emissions and putting in place strong regulations on climate change, that he's actually taking credit for a progressive Conservative initiative that this party brought in that actually caused real reductions in carbon emissions without taxing Nova Scotians more. And that initiative, Mr. Speaker, was done in concert with promoting a growing economy and real jobs, as well as carbon reductions. So I'd like to ask the Premier, since he won't show Nova Scotians what he's really up to with his carbon pricing working group, will he confirm today that he's at least asked him to consider the jobs and the cost of living and the economic impact of carbon pricing on the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to first of all correct something for the Honourable Member said. I wasn't taking credit for it, Mr. Speaker. I was giving Nova Scotians credit, Mr. Speaker. Something the Honourable Member want to think about once in a while. It's not about him. It's actually about Nova Scotians is why we're in this place. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, the record of those two governments, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, it's good to hear the member for Pictou finally standing up for his leader. He spent all summer going behind his back. But Mr. Speaker, I want to say something, Mr. Speaker. Under those two parties, power rates have risen 62%, Mr. Speaker, in this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, if the Premier wants to make it about the people of Nova Scotia, he can be direct and honest with them right now about what his working group is up to. He says no carbon taxes will come from the people of Nova Scotia, but he knows full well that cap and trade would also cost the people of Nova Scotia more. Will he tell the people directly today that he is not looking at imposing a second form, a hidden form of tax on the people of Nova Scotia by introducing a cap and trade system?
The Honourable Premier.
The only hidden tax, Mr. Speaker, that was put on Nova Scotia was done by that party when it came to power rates.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, it was the Premier who told Nova Scotians when he was running he was against the efficiency tax on our power bills, only to get into office and make it a hidden tax instead of get rid of it altogether. It is the Premier that likes hidden taxes, and he proved it when he took the efficiency tax, which is at least open and transparent, and he hid it within our power bills, Mr. Speaker. Now he says he's against carbon tax, but in fact he won't deny that he'll look at a hidden form of carbon tax called cap-and-trade carbon pricing. Is he going to do cap-and-trade carbon pricing to drive up the cost of living for Nova Scotians, yes or no?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member. I want to congratulate the Minister of Energy for the tremendous work he's doing to stabilize energy rates across this province, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, neither one of those two parties could stand up in this House and say they've stabilized energy rates, Mr. Speaker. All they can say is they've grown by 30% and 40% under their watch, Mr. Speaker. Let me be clear. This government will stand up for Nova Scotians. We know we have a role, Mr. Speaker, continue to help the national government achieve its carbon pricing, Mr. Speaker. We will do so. And we'll do so in a fair, thoughtful way, Mr. Speaker, and we'll communicate that to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, over the summer, my caucus released a detailed breakdown of the Liberal cuts to nursing homes and residential care facilities that was obtained through a Freedom of Information request. Through conversations with nursing homes around the province, it became clear that the numbers we were given, Mr. Speaker, were incomplete, and the cuts were much worse, in some cases almost double. For example, documents that the government provided said that St. Vincent's Nursing Home in Halifax was cut by $65,000. The administration at the facility said it was actually $128,000, Mr. Speaker. Can the minister explain the difference between the numbers the government provided us and the actual cuts reported by long-term care facilities across the province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I'm pleased to tell Nova Scotians is that we now have over $800 million invested both in long-term care and in home care in this province. And we are now working to look after our seniors where they want to be looked after. We're hearing, of course, first and foremost is to get the care that they need in their own home, and our plan is working and effective in that way.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, for those listening at home or in the gallery, that's a prime example of not coming close to answering the question. The government provided us information about the cuts that they made on nursing homes and care facilities across the province. When we fact-checked that, Mr. Speaker, with the facilities, those numbers were wrong. They were inaccurate. They did not provide the accurate information, Mr. Speaker. What is the government hiding? Why would they not tell us, through freedom of information, if they want to be transparent and open government, like the Premier said before the election, why were we given one set of numbers which were completely untrue, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know in terms of what was presented, we had a 1% cut in the previous fiscal year, 1% this year. What has been provided to the opposition through the Freedom of Information officer is an accurate picture of the cut for 16-17 fiscal year.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, the Federation of Agriculture represents 2,400 farm businesses representing all aspects of agriculture in our province, and the vision of the Federation is for a sustainable future for our farming communities in Nova Scotia, and a profitable and competitive one. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is this. Will the Minister admit that Liberal carbon taxes will put our agriculture industry at a competitive disadvantage?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Indeed, it's an important question. I think the Premier's already answered the question on that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure what to think about that answer. I'm not sure I heard the Premier's clearly on that. Mr. Speaker, last spring the Federation of Agriculture wrote the government and asked that the Liberal government exempt Nova Scotia agriculture from any future carbon tax pricing, and I will table that letter. The letter said that additional costs of carbon pricing will impact farmers, increase the price of their products, will prevent new farm businesses from seeing Nova Scotia as a viable business, a place to do business. And we know that's what happened in British Columbia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister, and I hope I will get a more substantive answer, is will the minister commit today to giving farmers and consumers a break by exempting agriculture from any carbon tax?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much for the question. I'll defer that to the Premier.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just in case the honourable member missed it early on, British Columbia has introduced a carbon tax. I've made it clear this government will not be introducing a carbon tax in this province.
The honourable member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Business. Too many Nova Scotians are struggling to make ends meet. Robert Hunt, a partner with Grant Thornton, said, "Most people aren't living extravagant lives. They simply don't make enough money to keep up with the cost of living." Job losses in Alberta's oil industry have also hurt many Nova Scotians. They've moved back home, they have either lost their EI or it's running out, and they have nowhere to turn to. We need to know, when will the minister take concrete action to create jobs so people can get ahead in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. I think the terminology used, the concrete component of her question, is critically important. We are laying the foundation for economic growth, Mr. Speaker. We're creating an environment where businesses can be successful. The business community has told us as government, you have to get out of the way and let us lead. We're working with the government to create that foundation, that concrete foundation, Mr. Speaker, and the private sector is stepping up.
The honourable member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the minister for his answer. We also need the government to step up, too. I mean, we know that there's too many young Nova Scotians that are struggling in this province. On average, 1,200 to 1,300, somewhere in their 20s, are leaving the province on an annual basis. They're going to other provinces to find work, and I'll actually table that stat. Worse yet, those who often stay are underemployed. We often go into places like Tim Hortons, McDonald's, and we see tons of people in their 20s with an X-ring working. And the Halifax Partnership reports that more than 40% of employed university degree holders aged 25 to 34 work in jobs not even requiring a degree. How many of our best and brightest young people do we have to lose before the minister comes up with a real plan tailored to this age group?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the responsibilities within the Department of Business is to align government crown agencies and government departments along economic growth strategies and visions. And, Mr. Speaker, this government is doing that. 1,500 new youth employed in the civil service through a number of government programs, Mr. Speaker. The Graduate to Opportunities program is one example. We've eliminated the requirement for 2 years of experience for new graduates, Mr. Speaker. Those continue to grow numbers of youth employment in government, and we'll continue with that strategy, laying a concrete foundation for success.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Environment. A growing number of Nova Scotians are raising concerns about the current environmental approval process. Fishers, First Nations, quarry opponents, and many more have recently expressed frustration about this issue. Unfortunately, it seems many are losing faith in this process, as we saw yesterday from the protesters. My question, Mr. Speaker, is I'd like to ask the minister if she is satisfied with the process and believes that it is working in the best interest of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank the member opposite for that very thoughtful question. Certainly, the environmental process, the approval process, is very intricate. You know, we deal in facts and science-based evidence when making any approvals. So certainly, I think that we really do have a good process, and we'll continue with that.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Minister, for your answer. Mr. Speaker, groups and individuals who have gone through the process, however, are raising questions about their ability to meaningfully participate people have concerns about many aspects of the process, from access to information to notice requirements to consultation. Mr. Speaker, these current concerns, if addressed, threatened the credibility of decisions made by the minister. So I'd like to ask the minister if her department would consider making changes to the environmental approval process.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and again, thank you to the members opposite for the question. The environmental approval process is very detailed and very important, certainly, and part of that process allows any group to come forward with any information that they can present as part of the environmental approval moving forward. So every group does have the opportunity to bring any evidence forward, and that will all be considered in any decisions that are made.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. In yesterday's throne speech, the government made this very interesting statement that if a student finishes their university degree in 4 years, their provincial student debt is forgiven. And that got the attention of students. I had a lot of calls from last night. Students want to know, when did this start and where do they apply? So I'll ask the Premier today, where do students apply to have their provincial student debt forgiven?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's one of the first acts this government did, Mr. Speaker, was we recognized unlike the former government, the NDP government, who's talking about free tuition across the board, we were going to recognize those hardworking Nova Scotians who have achieved a four-year degree, that we would forgive the Nova Scotia student loan portion of that. Mr. Speaker, I would encourage them to reach out to the Department of Labour and Advanced Education.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thanks the Premier for that answer. Many people think it's just the interest, but apparently today it's the whole, it's the principal and interest on that. So, like, maybe the Premier can table some analysis of how many students are taking advantage of this, because clearly not many students know about it. So maybe the Premier will table for the House how many students are taking advantage, what the cost has been, and how it's helped them.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is no interest, Mr. Speaker. We did away with charging interest to student loans, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would encourage any student out there who's graduated in the four-year degree to reach out to the Department of Labour and Advanced Education through that process. If the Honourable Member has names he wants to forward them to the Minister, I'm sure she'd be happy to also facilitate that through the Department.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, this Liberal government promised to give members of the Nova Scotia mining industry a fuel tax rebate in its 2015 budget. The industry pays $2.6 million in gas tax. Since then, this government has backed away from the promise, and a survey of mining association members shows miners worry that the promise may never be kept. My question to the Minister, will the Minister give members of the mining industry a straight answer today? Will miners get the promised fuel tax rebate?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, and thank the member opposite for the question. The mining industry in Nova Scotia today is enjoying an extreme renaissance. We have got three active mine programs going on in the province. Moose River, an excellent project, scheduled to come on stream next year, with over 100 people working there as we speak today, of which 98 of them are Nova Scotians. We've got Duncan looming in the background. We have the mine at Dufferin Mines coming back on stream. Our mining industry is in great shape in this province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, that's a David Price curveball. I was looking for a fastball, Mr. Okay. It was...
Order, Speaker, please. The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre has the floor. Order, please. The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre has
again,
the floor.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I was looking for a straight answer, like a fastball right down the middle of that plate. But anyway, Mr. Speaker, moving on here, members of Nova Scotia's mining industry use 16 million litres of gas per year. A carbon tax of 7 or 11 cents per litre would cost the industry about $1 million more and obviously kill jobs. My question to the Minister, will the Minister reassure members of Nova Scotia's mining industry that they'll be excluded from the Liberal carbon tax?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I must say that our great friends in the mining industry are close partners of developing Nova Scotia and creating economic development, and we value that relationship greatly. If the member opposite was listening, he would have heard what our Premier said about carbon taxation. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Hub School model is an opportunity to use innovative partnerships to keep education and children in the heart of their communities. So these schools become a focal point for community activities, Mr. Speaker. Now, despite having dedicated volunteers, broad community support, and well-developed plans, there has been not one community been able to get a Hub School approved yet because they say it is impossible under the parameters set by the Minister of Education. Now, my question for the minister is this. I know that she has been spoken to and that she has finally said she's open to changing the parameters. So would she please tell the House today what exact actions she plans to take?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to the question, when the whole notion of hub school was contemplated, it came when the NDP were in power. They started talking about hub school, had no idea what the definition was, had no idea what the criteria should be, but thought everybody should have one. So the first step that we took as a government was, first of all, to identify and define hub school and then to set the criteria. And we are currently working through that process.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At a recent meeting of the Human Resources Committee, Bob Fowler, the chairman of the province's School Review Committee, told us, I think if we truly want hub school models, if we want to try one, there probably needs to be some sort of transition process. Now, Mr. Speaker, the year before that, in 2015, Mr. Fowler said the province wasn't showing leadership on the file. So far, the education minister and premier have left rural communities to fend for themselves instead of providing the necessary supports to get the hub model moving in Nova Scotia. So my question for the minister, could she please just tell Nova Scotians today what she and her government will do to put supports in place for hub schools in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to remind the member and all members in the House that the decision about hub schools and the proposal that a community brings forward does not come to the minister. It does not come to the Department of Education. It comes to the school board because it is a partnership and a proposal that has to be supported by the school board. I do not see them. It's not in the legislation for me to review them. It certainly is the responsibility of the communities to work with their school boards, and the final decision about hub schools and whether the proposal is accepted or not is one from the school board.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the Minister of Education. The renovations at Frank H. East Pictou are something that the community are desperately in need. The community wants them. It's been a high priority for the school board on their list for the last couple of years. I know we have a capital budget that will probably come up over the next couple of months. I wonder if the minister can give a little bit of hope to the people of the communities that maybe this renovation may finally start to take place.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, and to the member opposite. A question that was asked in the previous session, my answer was the same. I believe it gave some hope. It certainly is clear that we will be announcing any capital projects in the fall. That's the normal time of year when the capital projects are announced. And I have indicated to the member opposite that FH is certainly a high priority for the board. They've identified that. And we know that there is a transition plan there that does involve closing a large school, accommodating kids in a smaller school, and making the necessary renovations so that it can accommodate a junior high population. And I would ask the member to stay tuned.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do thank the Minister for that. It is a priority for the board. It's also a priority for the community because it's a necessary renovation. Kids are really deserving of this, and so are the families. So Since it's a priority for the board, it's a priority for the communities. I think I'm hearing it's a priority for the department, but I will stay tuned on that one. Thank you.
The honourable member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, a question for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, personal bankruptcies in Nova Scotia. 5,500 Nova Scotians have filed for bankruptcy this year. That's up 37% in 2016. That is the highest rate in the country. Mr. Speaker, insolvency trustees point to Nova Scotia's poor economy as a result or a reason for these bankruptcies. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister, if this government's plan to grow the economy is working, why do we see evidence that it is not working in these increased bankruptcies?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the important question. Certainly, such impacts of such events in a person's life, personal bankruptcies, is certainly a very concerning experience to go through for any individual. With respect to the circumstances for each individual that is facing the situation nationally and you know, the changes that have affected the economy, particularly in the resource sector, Mr. Speaker, has affected many Canadians right across this country, and people in Nova Scotia were not immune to that. Thank you.
The honourable member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday in the throne speech, we heard something that appears positive on the surface, and that is the government offering a down payment assistance pilot program to get more Nova Scotians to be able to own homes. And yes, certainly on the surface it sounds good, but do we not learn any lessons from the housing crisis a few years back and the stock market crash in 2008? When people buy homes that can't afford them, they soon discover they have to pay property taxes, they have maintenance costs, they have to purchase home insurance, and they have to pay interest on a mortgage. If this government has thought this through, I will ask the Minister of Finance, what would a 1% increase in interest rates, how would that affect his monthly family budget?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I do thank the member opposite for his question, and I think if I heard him correctly, what he's just done is indicated his support for the federal Liberal government's recent changes to mortgage rules. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the now Minister of Natural Resources. On May the 8th, 2015, the member for Yarmouth, who was then the Minister of Natural Resources, stood before this House and told us that the province was on track to reduce clear-cutting to no more than 50% of all harvest. Mr. Speaker, just over 1 year, Nova Scotians were shocked to hear that the current Minister of Natural Resources announced the government was stepping away from the 50% target set out in the Natural Resource Strategy. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister is, if we were on track just a year ago, why has this plan been derailed?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to assure Nova Scotians that we have taken that, the halfway point in our strategy to take a look at and realign our strategy, perhaps. There's been no decision taken to take the action that he is talking about. We have listened to Nova Scotians, and we're following science-based decision-making. The fact is that full tree harvesting in Nova Scotia accounts for less than 4% of the total harvest in the province. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader in the House for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and please allow me one more pun. Apparently the Minister can't see the forest for the trees. Mr. Speaker, the Natural Resource Strategy is a result of extensive consultation over a long period of time. It is not simply a policy or document of a former government. Since the Minister's announcement, our caucus and the NDP constituency's offices have received plenty of correspondence from Nova Scotians who were disappointed, I repeat, disappointed by this government's decision. So, Mr. Speaker, we know that the level of in-depth consultation that was undertaken to establish the 50% target, and I asked the Minister, who did he consult with in deciding to step away from such a target?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I'm very proud of the transparent process that we have in the Department for consulting with Nova Scotians. We have the forest viewer, and I'd invite members to go online and look at the proposed cuts, where they are in Nova Scotia, when they are going to occur. That is First time that's available to Nova Scotia. That's transparency. That's telling people the truth, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I want to acknowledge the need to make changes in the Department of Community Services. And second of all, I want to acknowledge the need for children to be protected within our society. I have been working with a family now for about a year and who are involved in the Child Protection Services program. And I have had numerous conversations with them. And I feel that there is a need to go a little bit further now in their case. But with all that has been done, I don't think family healing is really taking place. I know that's part of the mandate, is to make sure that families are healing properly. My question to the minister is, how can we as a political body ensure that families are being treated in a healthy way rather than in a derisive way?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, and I thank my colleague for that very thoughtful question. I know he's very passionate about child welfare, as I am and many people in this House. It is a very difficult time when children are taken into care and families are in crisis. We have to understand as politicians, as people in this House, that we have a responsibility to protect children in Nova Scotia and across the country. They are our most vulnerable citizens. There is experts that work within the department, within government, that assess the needs of every family that come into contact with the department. Protecting children, making sure that they're supported and that families are supported are always a priority, and we will continue to make it a priority.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Musquodoboit Valley.
I would like to offer something. I know when I was in palliative care at the hospital, there was a team. And we meet every so often, and we take that situation and bring in all the people that are involved in it. I'm wondering if this would be a possibility of having every couple of months or whatever to have the team of psychologists and therapists, community services, everyone involved in the case to sit down and say, what do we need to do next for this family, if that's a possibility.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Case conferencing, which is what you're referring to, actually does happen within the Department of Community Services and Child Welfare, and it is made up of the professionals that you just mentioned. One of the reasons why it was so important to upgrade the Child and Family Services Act is to make sure that we get to families before a period of crisis, to make sure they're supported before children are taken into care. This government has invested incredibly into child welfare across this province. $2 million a year for family resource centres, over $1 million just last year to take parenting journeys from 12 to 27 sites in Nova Scotia. Those are the tools, those are the techniques that we have in our arsenal to really help families before they get to a point of crisis.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. On Wednesday, we learned from the Auditor General that the Nova Scotia Health Authority had to take $7 million from a restricted fund to cover operational costs, such as payroll, Mr. Speaker. This despite the fact that the Department of Health owed the Health Authority over $70 million. On top of this, Mr. Speaker, the Auditor General pointed out that the Department of Health came in $31 million under budget last year. So I'd like to ask the minister, how could this possibly take place under his watch?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to say that we advance every 2 weeks over $60 million for operations. We all know that, or maybe we don't, that there's in fact a considerable amount of invoicing back to the department especially during the transition to the One Health Authority, and that's where the $70 million factor came in for 30 days, 60 days, maybe some even at 90 days. What we really need to be celebrating is that the Health Authority in its first year not only looked after the $29 million deficit that was on their books, they also
came in at $31 million under for $70 million saved in the first year of operations.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
What we can't celebrate, Mr. Speaker, is the work of the Department of Health and the minister in this government. They had to take money and funds from a restricted fund to cover operational costs. So it doesn't matter if they give $50 million a month, $60 million a month, $70 million a month. They didn't have enough money to make payroll, Mr. Speaker. How can that happen when the government says they're here trying to streamline operations and the health authority has to remove money from restricted funds? So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, we hear of some of the crisis in healthcare right now. Has the government paid back the $70 million? And will we see the health authority have to dip into restricted funds to cover operational funds in the future?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to inform the member opposite, who has asked a good question, that these funds have been repaid, and also we accept, and NSHA fully accepts the recommendation of the Auditor General. And again, I would point out, look at the extremely strong work being done by the Health Authority, because there is more good work to be announced that the Health Authority is doing.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Business. Mr. Speaker, the Canadian Payroll Association reports that 59% of Atlantic Canadians are now living paycheck to paycheck. Furthermore, 33% of Atlantic Canadians will find it hard to come up with a $2,000 in case of emergency. And we see this today in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker. When we're faced with a crisis, families have fewer and fewer choices because of how the province has managed their economy. So my question to the Minister is, what specific steps has the Liberal government taken to prevent Nova Scotians from having to make this devastating choice?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's really been a change in discussion, Mr. Speaker, in the attitude towards economic growth. We know that the former strategies couldn't work. We've had extensive discussions, Mr. Speaker, within government and outside of government. We've brought the private sector into government to lead those discussions, Mr. Speaker, and things are changing. And I'll give you one example, Mr. Speaker. A small business in my community, an electrical company, looking for an opportunity to grow, reached into their employees and raised $1 million to build an expansion, to hire more people and provide employment opportunities to Nova Scotians. This is happening, Mr. Speaker, across the province. It's a change in discussion. It's a change in attitude. We've turned the corner. There is a bright, prosperous future for this province.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would you please call under government motions, address, and reply?
We'll now call address and reply. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am very pleased to continue on where I left off yesterday in my address and reply. I just am going to do a quick time check, Mr. Speaker, on my remaining time. Got a lot to cover. Perhaps while that's going on, I'll begin. Mr. Speaker, yesterday, the weakest throne speech in our nation's history was tabled here in the legislature. It's hard to believe that the government brought the Lieutenant Governor here to this House when they had so little to say, Mr. Speaker. In fact, I think the government owes the Lieutenant Governor an apology for bothering